What's going on, everyone? It's Bluff here, and we're driving through the states in the Bluffmobile, and the best thing that we can do is play our favorite casino-style games on SpinQuest. They have over 1,000 games, including live dealer, blackjack, and craps, with tons of slots and unlimited options. You can get a $30 coin pack for just $10 for new users. Sign up today. Go to SpinQuest.com right now.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
It's time to turn off the lights and turn on the dark.
Chilling tales for dark nights.
Good evening, listener. You're listening to Chilling Tales for Dark Nights. On tonight's edition, we invite you to leave behind your safe reality and descend with us into the frightening depths of the most terrifying imaginations with two audio adaptations of frightening fiction about vexing video games and talented targets. I'm your host, Steve Taylor, and tonight I'll be your guide as we traverse the dimly lit corridors of your darkest dreams. I also wanted to take a moment to thank you for all of your donations. We are almost there, but still need your help. Every share, donation, and comment of support helps. Let's keep building this thing together. A lot of listeners have inquired as to what this fundraiser is for, and I'm happy to tell you that there is a breakdown and allocation description on our GoFundMe page. Joining us tonight to help bring to life the frightening fiction of J.G. Martin and Brett O'Reilly are voice talents Nick Goroff, Jeff Sturdivant, Melissa Medina, Danielle Hewitt, Olivia Steele, and Michelle Kane. Now, get your ticket ready, take your seat in our Theater of the Minds, and brace yourself. It's time to turn off the lights and turn on the dark. Our first tale this evening is written by J.G. Martin and performed by Nick Goroff, Jeff Sturdivant, and Melissa Medina. Sometimes there's nothing like sitting down to zone out on a video game at the end of a hard day. But don't forget to save your game. Now, without further ado, I present to you Quick Save.
The game does something strange. The screen flickers, and the tower of wind becomes crooked, its pixels jagged and uneven. John frowns, wondering if he's encountered a glitch. Weird. He rounds the corner and goes down the sunset path, a little dirt trail that winds its way into a forest, winds its way toward his in-game home, a small cabin by the lake. He means to drop off his loot, grab a glass of water in real life, and then head out on a new quest. But his cabin isn't there. Not where it should be, at least. Instead, there is another cabin. This one built with rotten lumber, with broken windows and a door hanging from its hinges, groaning in the gentle breeze. John swallows. A scatter of blood decorates its front step. He's never seen this aspect of the game before, that his cabin, his home base, could somehow have been attacked, raided. Perhaps, he thinks, this was just an October patch, something for Halloween. Yeah, that must be it. He guides his character up the steps and in through the door. Darkness greets him. John squints at his computer screen, trying to make out anything in the ocean of black pixels, but all he can see is the faint outline of broken furniture and a shape on the floor. A body. Unease takes root in his stomach. The game music, usually soaring with the notes of high adventure, suddenly becomes a stuttering, sharp mechanical drone. The change is so jarring that he rips his headphones from his head. He throws them aside. But the music persists. Now it's coming from his computer speakers. Loud, lurching, moaning with all the unnatural melody of a cannibal's teeth digging into still living flesh. He reaches for the volume, but it doesn't give. He can't escape this music, this treacherous soundscape. "This way," a voice whispers. His computer screen flickers, and in the darkness of his cabin, he spots a gentle light down the hall. It's coming from where his loot room should be, if this had actually been his in-game cabin. But somehow John realizes that it isn't. It's a different place, a more sinister place. John's fingers twitch as he moves his mouse over his desk, as he guides his character down the corridor, toward the glimmer of light. His pulse races. Whatever the developers patched into the game for Halloween, it's compelling content.
"This way,"
the voice says again, and now it's louder. As John moves through the cabin, his character's eyes adjust. The darkness recedes. Now he can see broken pottery on the floor, moldy food on the table, and cobwebs dressing the rafters. The cabin is worn down, dilapidated. It's only after John rounds the next corner, however, that he realizes that the cabin looks horribly familiar. It's not his in-game cabin. Not by a long shot. What it is his house. The one he lived in as a boy. Down to the little pencil etchings carved into the kitchen wall, showing his height over the small years of his life. The layout is identical. But how? He moves through the mausoleum of memories, awestruck and terrified. Graffiti lines the surfaces. Needles litter the carpet. There are bones in the fireplace, painted black by ashes and age. There's a thud from downstairs. Loud and sudden. John bolts up from his desk. The sound doesn't come from the game. It comes from downstairs. His downstairs. In real life. "Hello?" John calls as he steps away from his computer. But then all the doors on his computer screen begin opening and closing. Opening and closing. They're crashing, louder and louder. The voice is beckoning him again. It's calling out to him to remember. Remember what? John thinks about opening his bedroom door, about going downstairs to check on that thud, but then he figures he's probably overreacting anyway. He figures he's probably just a bit too spun up from how eerie this Halloween update is. And it's making his imagination see the sound of an acorn falling on his kitchen roof or his old house settling as something sinister, malicious. He takes a breath. He sits back down in his computer chair and resolves to explore this fascinating, horrifying update. The slamming doors in the game stop. The old house is suddenly still, silent. Then, at the top of the stairs, a single door creaks open to reveal a familiar sight. John's childhood bedroom.
"Up here,"
says the narrator. John trembles as his fingers tap the keyboard, moving his character up the steps and into the room. When he enters it, there's a crash. It's the sound of a door being kicked down. Not in the game, in real life. Heart pounding, John bolts up to investigate. but a voice calls out from his computer speakers, one that he recognizes.
Don't leave me alone,
it says, whimpering.
Don't leave me alone again.
It's his mother, June. How the hell? No, there'll be time to question that later. For now, there's a very real chance somebody is breaking into John's house. John opens his bedroom door. He timidly looks down the stairs to check that there's nobody inside, that he's hearing things, and it's all in his head. But he spots a shadow. Two of them. They lurch across his kitchen counter, voices muttering in alien tongues. Panic seeps into John. He closes his door as quietly as he can, praying that the intruders don't notice. He reaches for his phone, reaches to dial 911 to report a break-in at his residence.
This is 911. What is your emergency?
Asks the operator. There are burglars downstairs, John whispers. I don't know if they have weapons. A second passes, then another. Hello? John says.
Don't leave me alone here, John,
says the operator.
Please help.
What the fuck? John drops his phone, shaken. His mother's voice calls from his computer again. From the game. John's gaze swivels to the monitor. A cold sweat spreads across his body, his flesh prickling with goosebumps. The screen is fizzling, crackling. The display is all purple and blue, and the bedroom John's character is standing inside of blinks from bright and whole to broken and dark.
John?
The voice repeats, but this time it's distorted. It's nothing but a grotesque approximation of his mother's. Like hearing her voice through a dying phonograph.
Are you there, sweetheart?
John stumbles from the computer. No, this is too much. It can't be real. This is beyond insane. The game's music blares, reaching an awful crescendo. Its ear-splitting mechanical droning floods his bedroom, his house, and John lunges for the computer's power cord, terrified that the shadows downstairs will hear this and... Shouting erupts from below.
Hello?
Anybody home?
They're voices that John doesn't recognize. Strangers. Intruders.
Come on downstairs.
Don't make us come up there!
John brings his hands to his ears. He clenches his eyes shut. He tries to wake up because he must be fast asleep, lost in a nightmare. But he can't. Footsteps sound on the stairs. Creak. Creak.
We just want to talk.
Creak. Creak. The intruders are up the steps now. They're coming to his bedroom. Get out of my house! John screams. The police are on their way!
We know.
There's a loud bang, and his door trembles. John rushes forward, pressing himself against it and bracing it as best he can. Panicked tears stream down his face. Just leave me alone! Take whatever you want! Just leave me alone!
You're the only thing we came for.
Get away from the door.
There's another loud bang. This one is deafening. It's force enough to knock John off the door, onto his hands and knees. Before he can get back into position, the door hinge explodes outward, and the door swings forward, crashing into him painfully. He groans, dazed, disoriented. The room, his room, is changing now. It's morphing. Just like it did in the game. It's become dilapidated. Broken. His bed is a mess. Its sheets dusty and moth-eaten. His computer monitor is broken. His desktop long gone. He's no longer a young man. He's old. Too old. The gray of his beard tickles his face as he shifts on the ground. He feels as though he may be 50 years old now, perhaps 60. Long, greasy hair extends from his head, coarse and thinning. There are two figures standing above him, dark, imposing. A man and a woman, both armed with guns on their hips, both wearing Kevlar vests.
Dispatch,
the woman says, speaking into a black box on her shoulder.
We've located the suspect. It's Lewis. Again.
The voice crackles from the radio.
Copy that. Any idea how he keeps getting in there?
The woman looks down at John, frowning.
Looks like he broke through the boards on the kitchen window this time. You want us to bring him in?
Negative. Relocate him to the shelter on 4th and 9th.
Roger.
John fidgets in his seat. The window beside him passes in a blur of lights and scenery. The police cruiser's sirens aren't on, but they may as well be, for how disoriented he feels. The man in the passenger seat looks up at the rearview mirror. He looks at John in the back.
What's this guy's deal?
He asks the woman driving.
Seems like he's a known commodity around here.
The woman nods, her eyes scanning the road ahead.
Name's Jonathan Lewis. Used to be an addict.
She flips her turn signal and takes a right onto a neon-lit street.
Used to be.
The man looks back at John.
This guy's a mess. You sure he isn't still using?
Pretty sure.
Must have been some hard shit then.
Not as hard as you'd think.
The woman clicks her tongue as the car slows to a stop at the intersection.
You're gonna laugh, but try not to, okay? He's in a lot of pain.
Try me.
It was video games.
The man covers his mouth, chuckling.
All right, I'm laughing.
I wouldn't be. It's pretty tragic.
How's that?
The woman sighs, looking at John in the mirror. Her expression is full of sympathy, pity. He still doesn't recognize her, doesn't recognize the man, doesn't understand what police officers are doing arresting him, or why he's a frail old man in the back seat of a cop car. But he's listening. He's listening, and he's terrified, because deep down, this all feels familiar. It feels like something he's spent his entire life avoiding.
John's mother had several health issues,
the woman says.
Serious ones. She had difficulty taking care of herself to the point that she couldn't live alone, so John stayed with her well into his 30s. It put a lot of strain on John. He never got out much, never got much of a life of his own, because he always needed to be nearby, just in case something happened to her.
Outside, the traffic light turns green. The cruiser hums as the woman presses the gas.
So he gamed to pass the time?
Bingo. Got big into it. I guess it gave him the chance to talk to people, to have adventures, while still being close at hand for his mom. He ended up falling into a bit of a rabbit hole in one of the games, though. One of those big multiplayer ones with the massive worlds or whatever.
An MMO?
Yeah, sure, one of those. Anyway, one night while he was playing, his mother took a fall, a bad one, hit her head and bled out on the floor while John was upstairs finishing up a raid in his bedroom.
Jesus Christ. He didn't hear her?
She shrugs.
Guess not. He found her a few hours later, cold as a fish. The experience destroyed him. Never was himself after that.
The words fall around John like prison bars. He doesn't want to hear them. They're lies. All lies. He would never do that. How could he? No. No. No.
Want to know the sad thing?
What's that?
Asks the man.
As far as the coroner could tell, the mom died the moment her head struck the linoleum. Right away, you know? So Mr. Lewis here couldn't have helped her even if he did hear her fall.
The man looks at John in the mirror.
So why does he keep on going back to that house? Seems like the last place I'd want to be.
Don't know. The social workers seem to think it's a coping mechanism, a sort of derealization. He comes back every Halloween on the anniversary of his mother's death, Probably to relive the last time his life made any sense to him.
Rough go.
Yep.
The cruiser rolls to a stop, and the engine cuts off.
Here's us.
The woman unbuckles her seatbelt, opens the door, and the cab explodes with bright light. John grimaces, confused, blinded. A moment later, the door beside him opens, and the woman is standing there beneath a blue street sign that reads 4th and 9th.
Out you get now,
she says. John shimmies out of the car, nervous, afraid. His eyes dart from the busy traffic honking in the street to the throngs of people on the sidewalks to the towering building in front of him. Rusty bars cover its windows. Broken needles litter its steps. Fluorescent letters hang above its doorway, buzzing quietly. Brighter hopes shelter. A new start.
Go on,
the woman says. She rounds the police car and stops by the driver's side door.
You don't want to be on the streets tonight. It's going to be a cold one.
John shivers. It's cold already. He takes a hesitant step forward, and as he does, the passenger window of the cruiser rolls down. The man leans out of it. He waves to John.
Welcome home,
he says, a smirk on his lips.
Guess I'll see you again next year.
The cruiser pulls off into the street, disappearing in the traffic.
Whether it's slots or live dealers, SpinQuest.com has the fun and action you're looking for. With SpinQuest exclusives, blackjack, roulette, baccarat, and even live dice with craps and bubble craps. The games never stop, so you don't have to. And right now, new users get $30 coin packs for just $10. Play now at SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
I hope you enjoyed Quick Save, as written by J.G. Martin and performed by Nick Goroff, Jeff Sturtevant, and Melissa Medina. Our second tale of the evening is written by Brett O'Reilly and performed by Nick Goroff, Melissa Medina, Danielle Hewitt, Olivia Steele, and Michelle Kane. In it, we meet a man out on the town, lured in by a group of women who seem to be just what the doctor ordered. However, this tale puts a spin on the term getting lucky. Now, without further ado, I present to you Lucky Star.
Another?
Chase contemplated the glass in front of him and the last swallow that lurked at the bottom. Strong stuff. Stronger than he was used to. But it had taken the edge off the ache in his knee. Sure, he said. A smaller glass, though. I'm driving out of here tonight. The bartender arched an eyebrow.
So, a half pint?
Yeah, whatever. Chase shrugged and gave the championship ring on his finger a twist. A souvenir of days gone by. Much like the wedding ring on his other hand. On another day, he might have wondered why he was still wearing either. In the moment, however, he'd reached a point beyond caring. Helped along the way by the honey lager. One more and he'd split this podunk town, try to pretend it never existed, that he'd never been. Not that he'd ever succeed. Vaughn, Perry, and the others would make sure he didn't.
Excuse me, sir? Are you Chase Dempster, the hockey player?
The voice was husky, yet feminine. Unable to help himself, Chase jerked slightly in surprise. He turned to find two women standing a few feet away, watching him.
Hi,
they said in unison, grinning. Both gave him a small wave. He guessed the younger, a blonde, to be around 28 or 29. The older appeared a youthful 50. her hair silvery gray, a few soft lines etched in her features. Possibly mother-daughter, though doubtful. The blonde's face was crafted of pale Scandinavian lines, whereas the gray-haired one had a darker cast to her. The blonde let out a squeal a younger Chase would have found enticing.
It is him! It is Chase Stimster!
The older woman, whom in Chase's youth would have fit his definition of a silver fox, spoke with the voice which had first called his attention.
We're sorry to bother you, Mr. Dempster. We're just really big fans. That and we don't get many celebrities passing through Darkwater.
Chase flashed the duo his most inviting smile. Thankful he'd never left any of his teeth on the ice. Unlike his career, thankfully he'd earned his championship ring before blowing out his knee. Oh, no trouble at all, he replied. Always a pleasure to meet some fans. The two women smiled again, filling Chase with an old, familiar warmth. Out of the corner of his eye, he glimpsed the bartender's sneer as the latter pulled a draft from the tap. Chase ignored him. The blonde piped up again.
I can't believe it. An honest-to-goodness Stanley Cup champion. Would you like to come sit with us, Mr. Dempster? We'd love to get to know you better.
A nervous smile accompanied a nervous gesture towards a table near the door of the bar. There, a redhead and a brunette, both in their mid-30s, were watching excitedly and waved when Chase turned their way. The thought, a set of assorted flavors, ran through Chase's mind, followed by a spur of insecurity. 25 years ago, he would have been delighted at the possibilities. Now, age, a busted knee, and a broken marriage had left him more than a little bruised.
Come, Mr. Dempster. Come sit with us.
The brunette waved him over as the redhead snatched a chair from another table. The blonde and the older woman waited impatiently for his decision. The bartender shook his head as he placed Chase's beer on a vacant coaster. Chase was pleased to note none of the ladies paid the bartender any mind, or even seemed to notice his presence. Well, Chase hesitated. I only stopped in for a quick one, and I still have to find a motel for the night.
Oh, that wouldn't be a problem, Mr. Dempster. I own the Darkwater Inn, a few blocks away. I have a few vacancies at this time. I'm sure I could set you up in a room. On the house.
The silver-haired woman smiled coyly at him. Chase blinked, surprised but also intrigued. A bit of the old Chase Dempster rose up. The one from before he'd met Stephanie Chambers. The one which had disappeared long before she'd served him with papers stamped with irreconcilable differences. Well, his Texas drawl slipped to the fore. It will be remiss of me to turn down such a generous offer. He glanced over at the table where the other woman waited. If it's not too much trouble, that is.
Of course not, Mr. Dempster. Please join us.
The two women escorted him over to the table where their friends squirmed like excited schoolgirls about to meet their teen boy band crush. A quick round of introductions was made. Kathleen, of the husky voice and silver hair, was clearly the matriarch of the quartet. Blonde Katrina, of the squeaky voice, was next, all bright-eyed and bushy-tailed. Chase was tired, just from watching her bounce in her chair. The brunette, Kari, was the chatterbox of the crew. She was also the only one who wore a wedding ring. Chase noticed. Self-consciously, Chase slipped his own off under the table, dropping the gold band into his pocket with only a slight measure of guilt. Stephanie's choice, he reminded himself. He'd been willing to work things through. Which left Catherine, the redhead. Chase was fond of redheads. His estranged wife was testament to that. And Catherine had everything he liked about redheads in spades, from the touch of freckles on her cheeks to the slight rasp in her voice to her sparkling emerald eyes. In fact, Catherine could have easily passed for Stephanie, as she had been 15 years ago. Maybe this side trip didn't have to be a waste of time after all. Again, Chase felt a little hint of his old self returning, like a call back to his glory days.
What brings you to Darkwater, Mr. Dempster?
This was the brunette, Carrie, peering at him with interest. Please, call me Chase. I'm not sure if you know, but since I retired from the ice, I've been working as an NHL talent scout. The foursome nodded in unison. A little eerily, Chase found. Currently, I'm with the new Seattle expansion. I got a tip the other day that one of your local teams, the Darkwater Diamonds, might have a diamond in the rough, so to speak. So I drove up to take a look. Of course, it turned out to be a bad tip. I didn't realize the Diamonds were a beer league. He grimaced at a group of middle-aged men dressed in denim and flannel who cheered as one of their number balanced a stack of empty beer mugs on his forehead. All four women shot the inebriated hockey crew a look of derision.
Definitely no diamonds in the rough there,
snorted the redhead.
You'd be lucky to find a cubic zirconium in that bag of rocks.
The quartet guffawed, and Chase chuckled. Are you all on a team yourselves? Chase asked, noting their matching black and pink runback jackets. The silver fox gave Chase a smile that left him a little lightheaded, though he admitted to himself it might just be the beer.
Yes, we are. We're the Darkwater Divas, the local women's curling team. I'm the team skip, Carrie's the vice, Catherine's our second, and Katrina's our lead.
That is a lot of case. Chase struggled to keep them all straight as he took another pull from his beer.
Yeah, people started calling us the special case. Only they started putting the emphasis on special. Because we can't seem to move past the first round of a tournament.
Except, I feel our luck changing. After all, we have a Stanley Cup champion among us. A bona fide NHL star.
And not just a star,
squealed Katrina.
But a star from Dallas.
Everyone, including Chase, gave a surprised laugh. Kathleen grinned at him.
Looks like you're our lucky star, Mr. Chase. Can we buy you another beer?
Chase glanced down at the glass in his hand, surprised to find it empty. Well, that would be very kind of you, he said graciously. He raised his glass and waggled it at the bartender across the room as he silently thanked the gods of hockey that not only had he been allowed to keep his teeth, but that his Darkwater excursion hadn't been a completely wasted trip. Even if he wasn't lucky to land some female companionship for the night, at least he had some now. It had been a long time since he'd felt that kind of warmth. Chase woke up with a dull throb in his knee and in his temples and instantly regretted drinking so much beer. Thankfully, his bladder wasn't troubling him at all. That thought was followed by another. What if he'd lost control of his bladder while he was unconscious? Reflexively, he reached for his groin, only to be stopped short. Lifting his hand twice more produced the same result, which he found duplicated when he tried to lift his other hand. Touched by panic, he tried to sit up only to find himself restrained across his chest. Reason slipped away as he struggled against his bonds, which also ran across his thighs and secured his feet. Even as his rational mind stepped aside for instinctive terror, his senses categorized other facts. The light around him was diffuse and distant. He was fully dressed, and in fact warmly dressed. The air was cold on his face, and finally, he wasn't alone. A squeaky voice spoke in the dim light.
I told you the restraints would hold. We've had to deal with bigger men than him in the hospital.
Chase turned his head towards the voice as a murmur of approval rose from three others. In the dimness he could make them out. The Darkwater Divas. standing there, watching him with an eagerness he was beginning to think he'd misinterpreted the first time around. All four wore dark, hooded robes straight out of a Hammer horror film. Still hazy from drink and adrenaline, Chase asked the first question that came to mind. "What's with the robes?"
"Do you like them?"
The brunette spoke up. Carrie. Her name was Carrie.
"I picked them up at the Halloween store that pops up every year. I know, it seems kind of cliche, but they really provide a sense of unity, I think. Like our own uniforms."
"But what about your curling jackets?" Chase's wits started to return to him. Looking around, he appeared to be in some kind of ice rink, one that was much narrower than a hockey arena. Three rows of bleachers lined the walls, with no glass to separate the ice from spectators. The muted light came from overhead fluorescents, dimmed down to the point where Chase couldn't be sure if there was anybody there in the stands. For all he could tell, the five of them were alone.
Whether it's slots or live dealers, SpinQuest.com has the fun and action you're looking for. With SpinQuest exclusives, blackjack, roulette, baccarat, and even live dice with craps and bubble craps. The games never stop, so you don't have to. And right now, new users get $30 coin packs for just $10. Play now at SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Catherine's slight, sexy rasp answered him.
"We thought of that, but we didn't want to take a chance getting blood on our jackets. We're still wearing them underneath, though."
At the mention of blood, a cold spike of fear drove through Chase. He raised his head and took a second look, this time focusing on his immediate surroundings. Brown leather restraints bound him to a white-sheeted hospital gurney. From underneath a patch of white gauze on his hand, a trail of clear tubing ran to a large white box mounted on an IV pole, its surface covered in dials and digital displays. From the box, two more lines of tubing ran upward to the top of the pole, where two empty IV bags each hung in separate plastic cases with transparent covers. A third snake of tubing led out of the fly of his unbuttoned jeans to another bag on a second IV pole. This third sack was nearly bursting with yellow fluid.
"Oh my God," gasped Chase. "What are you? You drugged me."
Whatever reaction he expected, he didn't expect the one he got. All four women burst out laughing.
"Oh, silly boy,"
cooed Kathleen. Or was it Catherine? No, that was the redhead. The silver-haired one, with the husky voice, was Kathleen.
"I admit we were going to, but we didn't need to. You, dear man, cannot hold your beer."
She gestured to the IV bag of amber liquid. Comprehension widened Chase's eyes with horror.
You stuck a catheter in me?"
"It's all right, Chase. Katrina..."
The diminutive blonde waved enthusiastically from beneath her Halloween store robe.
"Is a nurse. She knew what she was doing. We couldn't have you staining the gurney after all."
"I have to have it back by 6.
Katrina squeaked.
"That's when the morning shift starts."
Chase dropped his head back on the small pillow. "I don't understand. What is happening here?" He looked questioningly at Kathleen.
"Carrie will explain. It was her idea. She should get the credit."
Kathleen nodded at the trio, and the brunette stepped forward, almost tripping on the hem of her robe.
"Hi, Chase. To explain, you see, I actually got the idea when my husband was watching a documentary on ice sports. You see, there's this whole thing about the lucky loony."
Carrie hiked up her robe and fished a gold-colored Canadian coin from out of her pocket.
"You see, it started in Salt Lake City in 2002, when a loony was buried in the center ice. That year, both the men's and the women's Canadian hockey teams took home the gold. And Wayne Gretzky donated the loony to the Hockey Hall of Fame. In Turin 2006, loonies were buried at each end of the ice in the curling rink. The men's curling team took their first ever gold that year. Then came 2010. Canada won 26 medals, 14 of them gold, setting the world record for most gold medals won by a single country during a Winter Games. Given it was Vancouver that hosted, I have no doubt that there were loonies hidden everywhere. So you see, I had this idea that maybe we could do the same. Turn our losing streak into a winning one.
Only it didn't work.
Catherine interjected.
We didn't win a single game.
Offered Katrina.
If anything, it got worse. Everyone else started having great luck. Against us.
Kathleen jumped in.
It became pretty clear that we needed something different. Something new. And then, Carrie found the book.
She raised an old, thick book bound in brown, cracked leather.
You see.
Carrie started again.
My son got into the occult for a little while, honestly. Brad and I were just so happy it wasn't drugs.
Another appreciative murmur passed between the four women, as Chase wondered how he'd missed the signpost on the way into Darkwater that read, "Now entering the Twilight Zone."
Anyway, I was going through all his books one day. My son Tony's, not my husband, Brad's. To try and understand the appeal. You see, if you understand their hobbies, you can connect with them better.
Another nod of assent from the group.
And then I found the answer to our problems.
The ritual.
Katrina chipped in.
The ritual.
Repeated Carrie.
This one book. The Divermis Mysterious. Has.
She glanced at the book in Kathleen's hands.
A ritual to bestow luck on anyone who performs it.
She took a deep breath.
Only it comes with a catch.
It's a blood ritual,
said Catherine.
Basically, instead of putting a loony in the ice, we mix the lifeblood of a sacrifice into the red ice paint that the curling rings are painted with. That, we hope, will give us the luck we need to win.
Which is where you come in, Mr. Dempster,
Kathleen said.
We were going to use one of those idiots from the Diamonds. We were waiting for them to get drunk enough to lure one away without anyone noticing. Then Catherine spotted you at the bar.
Catherine took over, her voice laced with excitement.
I knew the minute I recognized you, it was meant to be. I'm sure one of those imbeciles would have worked fine, but a former NHL star?
And a Stanley Cup champion to boot.
Carrie beamed at Chase. Hold on a second. Chase tried to keep the frantic edge out of his voice. Why don't you take my ring? My Stanley Cup ring. You can bury it in the ice and it'll be like a loony. Only an actual championship token. You're bound to change your luck. And you don't have to sacrifice anyone. Especially me. Please, take it. All yours. I give it freely. A thoughtful silence fell across the rink. Chase lay statue still, ears straining, a desperate prayer cycling through his head.
He's got a point,
said Carrie.
Technically, the ring would probably work.
Chase allowed himself a sliver of hope.
I don't know,
Catherine said doubtfully.
We've gone to a lot of work to set this up. The gurney, the robes, renting the rink all night. I had to get Bob to reverse the motor on the rapid infuser without him suspecting anything.
Chase decided he didn't like the redheads anywhere as much as he used to.
It would save us a lot of other work, though.
Kathleen mused.
We still have to dispose of the body, and we didn't plan for his rental car. We would need to figure that out still. Taking the ring would save us a lot of hassle.
Chase flushed with thankfulness when he saw Carrie and Catherine had begun to nod in agreement. His gratitude was cut short when Katrina spoke, her squeaky voice filled with a surprising conviction.
We can't just take the ring. He knows who we are. We have him strapped to a hospital gurney in the middle of our curling rink with an IV and a catheter in him and a circle of candles all around the ice.
Chase couldn't help himself. He strained to spy the candles on the ice. Katrina continued.
Conspiracy to commit murder may not be murder, but we're still committing a felony. If we let him go, there is no way in hell he doesn't turn us in. And even if he didn't, we have no guarantee that the ring will work. Whereas, if we take both his ring and his blood...
Chase shuddered as the foursome exchanged glances, pondering their teammates' words.
We do already have the body disposal figured out,
Catherine commented.
Between the four of us, we should be able to figure out how to return the car with too much suspicion,
Carrie suggested.
We've come this far.
Kathleen studied each of the divas in turn, nodding.
It's settled then.
She gazed down at Chase.
I'm sorry, Mr. Dempster. Please understand this isn't personal. We do like you, and we are fans. We're just tired of being on the wrong side of the back line.
She glanced up.
Carrie, why don't you start lighting the candles? Katrina, you have the attame?
Kathleen opened the leather-bound tome to a dog-eared page. Katrina strode over, pulling a slender, black-handled dagger from underneath her robe. Spotting it, Chase began yelling for help.
It's no use,
Catherine told him.
The building is soundproof. We're here after hours, and Darkwater's too small a town to need night security. We have the whole rink to ourselves.
Besides, Chase, we're not going to stab you through the heart or anything so dramatic. All we need is a little nick for the ritual. The rest will collect with the rapid infuser that Catherine's boyfriend modified. That's the device on the IV pole. Normally, it transfuses blood into you. Bob's rewired to pull blood out of you. Though Bob doesn't know that. It'll be quick. The infuser can pull as much as 1,000 milliliters of blood in a minute. I promise you, it won't hurt at all. It'll be like going to sleep.
Please, you don't have to do this. Chase begged them. I can pay you. I have money. I've made some good investments. And I promise, I swear, I won't tell. Not a soul.
We don't want money, though,
chided Carrie, who had returned holding a barbecue lighter.
We're all quite comfortable financially. What we want is to win.
The quartet took up positions at the four corners of the gurney. Kathleen and Katrina near Chase's head, Carrie and Catherine down at his feet. Catherine carefully pulled the IV pole with the box-like humming machine a little closer.
Are we ready?
Kathleen asked. The others nodded.
Let's begin.
The four women closed their eyes and each held one hand out over Chase, palms down. As one, they began to chant.
From the darkest ice we summon thee, Windwalker.
Chase gaped at his captors in disbelief. Then it occurred to him. A joke. It was all a joke. An elaborate prank set up by Vaughn and Perry and the others. It had to be. Chase's head whipped around as he tried to scan the outer edges of the ring. Were they there now, in the stands, having a laugh at their fellow talent scout? Or watching from the warm comfort of a nearby hotel room through the eye of a hidden camera? A sickening thought occurred to him. Was Stephanie in on this? Angered and a little frightened at the thought of his frigid, soon-to-be ex-wife conspiring with his peers to turn a stupid snipe hunt into something so much more elaborate and cruel, Chase barely registered that Kathleen had unzipped his parka down to the chest restraint and was in the process of undoing his shirt. Kathleen snatched Chase's attention back as she held his shirt and parka apart, exposing a small portion of his upper chest. Katrina reached over, balancing the tip of the athame on his pectoral, immediately above his heart.
I get it now. I get it. You're funny. You guys are real funny. He really had me going.
Chase shouted furiously into the empty rink.
Nos offer munus summum tuum.
You can call it off now.
Chase's voice carried over the foursome's chant.
I'm wise to you. Not funny anymore.
Then he saw it. A figure cloaked in shadow, dark and indefinable in the stands, watching.
Stephanie,
he called.
Stephanie, is that you?
Vita qua, dona nobis gratiam tuam.
Ow!
Chase cried out, jerking in his restraints. The cut left by the athame was shallow, not much deeper than a scratch, yet it seared with icy fire. Blood welled up and struggled to move beyond its exit. The pain in his bad knee was long forgotten. At the foot of the gurney, Catherine reached over and pressed a button on the humming machine attached to the IV pole. A loud beep was followed by the low whir of a motor. A stream of crimson shot up the IV tube from under the gauze patch on Chase's hand. The stream disappeared into the bottom of the machine and reappeared at the top, where it funneled up and began to fill one of the two empty IV bags.
What? No, no. This has got to be a joke. It has to be a sick, stupid prank.
He spied the figure in the stands again. A malignant stalagmite in the empty rink.
Vaughn! Is that you? Perry! Perry, call it off! Call it off! Stephanie!
A wave of dizziness pulled the words away from him. The IV bag filled at an alarming rate as the chanting continued. Chase again looked at the thing in the bleachers, seeking, if not secure, at least some clarity. The shroud lifted its head and Chase stared into burning eyes as cold and ancient as Polaris itself. Above its terrible gaze sat a crown of antlers, majestic and corrupt. Chase understood. This was not Stephanie, here to witness a final humiliation before cutting him out of her life. Nor was it Vaughn or Perry, reaping the fruits of an elaborate stunt. No. The thing in the bleachers was here for him. To collect. It wanted him in a way that no mortal ever had. Terror surged through Chase's veins and arteries, replacing the lifeblood that drained from them.
Nos offer munus suum animam tuam, ita qua dona nobis gratiam tuam.
A bitter cold settled into Chase, a cold born of outer darkness and eldritch winds. The cold not felt in his dying physical frame, but in the depths of his soul. The first IV bag filled, which prompted the infuser to switch to the second sack without hesitation. He was dead before the second bag swelled to completion. To his horror, he did not die alone, however. When Carrie looked to see what he was staring at, all she saw were empty stands. The Special K's, as they'd rebranded themselves once they started curling on the international circuit, beamed at each other as medals were placed around their necks. Gold for their country. Gold for the pride of Darkwater. Gold for Kathleen, Carrie, Catherine, and Katrina. In one unified motion, all four reached up to gently touch their breastbones above the gold medallions. To their millions of adoring fans, it was a gesture of patriotism, of camaraderie, of heartfelt gratitude for their finest achievement. To the Special K's, it was simply reaffirming their lucky talismans were still there, underneath their curling jackets. It had been Carrie's idea, after her husband Brad had watched a documentary about Angelina Jolie. Miss Jolie,
and a former lover had worn vials of each other's blood around their necks. This had inspired the four women to create their own versions, using the lifeblood of their lucky star. Outside, in the darkness, the wind howled through the city of Milan as the light of Polaris, the North Star, continued to reach across the void.
I hope you enjoyed Lucky Star, as written by Brett O'Reilly and performed by Nick Garoff, Melissa Medina, Daniel Hewitt, Olivia Steele, and Michelle Kane. Both of tonight's tales came to us by our friends at Velox. Check out stories like this and more by visiting www.veloxbooks.com. On to the shows. Longtime resident Otis Gyrie has his very own show here on our network, Scary Stories Told in the Dark, which you can hear every Sunday night. We also feature Eric Peabody's Horror Hill, a podcast dedicated to some of our deeper and darker tales. We hope you check him out. And Drew Blood's Dark Tales airs Fridays, featuring some Southern Down Home horror. And don't forget to check out the Fear from the Heartland archives, featuring more than 120 episodes. Well, friends, our weekly descent into the depths has just about come to a close. But before we go, I'd like to take a moment to thank you for joining us for tonight and remind you to take a moment to stop by our iTunes page and leave Chilling Tales for Dark Nights a 5-star review and a kind word, and to follow us on Facebook, X, and Instagram if you haven't already. And of course, subscribe to us on YouTube, where you can find an archive of our work going back to 2012. And consider signing up as a patron at our website, chillingtalesfordarknights.com, to show your support and get all of our content ad-free. I'm your host of the evening, Steve Taylor, and it's been a pleasure. Tune in again next week when we once again turn off the lights and turn on the dark. Sweet dreams, listener. Sweet dreams.
Forget whatever plans you have this weekend because you're staying at home and playing on SpinQuest. And there's never been a better time to sign up than right now. New users get $30 coin packs for just $10. All the table games you love with hundreds of slot games and real cash prizes. That's at SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.